Live and local, this is a Juno Afternoon on Wednesday, June 14th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Aaron Elmore will be here to talk about Theater in the Rough's new production, Running with Pretty Sharp Things. We will get a tango lesson on the air, that should be good, from Pat Bielek. And Gershon Cohen will tell us about the upcoming Chilcat Challenge Triathlon. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon. And weather for the rest of today, scattered rain showers, lows in the mid-40s. Right now, it is 60 degrees in the Mendenhall Valley.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus in for Antonia Gonzalez. The National Congress of American Indians began its mid-year conference with a key federal administrator, Rhonda Lavaldo, reports.
Department of the Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke gave remarks to many in attendance of the opening of NCAI's mid-year conference. He spoke about the importance of sovereignty.
Sovereignty has to be more than a name. It has to be a relationship, a trust, a bonding, because sovereignty means just that. That you have a right for your own destination. You also have a right to your people. A commonality is tribes and warriors. And if you have to fight for your people. And I respect that.
Mashantucket Pequot Nation Tribal Chairman Rodney Butler was optimistic about the visit by Zinke.
The fact that he came to NCI shows that he's willing to engage, and that's step one of any relationship. But, you know, he has 3.5 years now to follow through and show that he's committed and build upon that relationship. So, but being here in front of all these incredible nations was a great first step, I believe.
Zinke opened the floor to questions and comments from attendees. He was also honored for his military service by veterans with a song and blanket. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
The Arizona Supreme Court ruled against the Gila River Indian community this week in a case involving a child in foster care who was later put up for adoption. The child tested positive for exposure to amphetamines and opiates at birth in 2014 and was removed from her mother and placed in foster care. The Arizona Department of Child Services notified the tribe of the removal, and court documents say officials tried to work to find a placement in the Gila River community, as required by the Federal Indian Child Welfare Act. The mother's rights were later terminated. When the foster parents filed to adopt the child, the tribe requested that the case be moved to tribal court. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled the state is not required to transfer all cases involving the adoption of Native children who are living outside their communities to tribal court. A very unsettled weather pattern is causing problems on tribal lands on the plains and in the Midwest. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Tuesday night brought several bouts of severe weather to the Midwest. Officials say two small tornadoes may have developed on Yankton Sioux tribal land in southeast South Dakota. A powerful storm with very strong winds formed in northeast Nebraska, home to the Omaha and Winnebago reservations. The storm came from what's known as a bow echo. Meteorologist Kyle Weiser with the National Weather Service explains how it developed.
The bow echo is just kind of an organized system. It's almost like a very small low pressure that develops. There's a strong jet max, you know, probably 15,000 to 30,000 feet off the ground, and that kind of gets wrapped into the storm system, and it accelerates into the strong updraft of the storm. And the reason it's called a bow is it starts to kind of make kind of a U-shape or a V-shape as it accelerates forward. And what it does is while the winds themselves aren't quite as strong as a tornado most of the time, they're much more widespread, anywhere from, you know, 10 or 20 miles wide to sometimes 80 or 90 miles wide.
Weiser says thousands of people lost power in the storms and a few trees temporarily slowed traffic on Interstate 29. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
The First Nations Development Institute announced nearly $500,000 in grants to 15 food and agriculture projects this week. The Native Agriculture and Food Systems Initiative aims to strengthen local food systems, increase access to healthy and traditional foods, and address food deserts, which are areas where fresh, healthy foods are not easily accessible. I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Yate support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitor planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support for this station comes from the Breeze Inn Lemon Creek, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily with a selection of baked goods, hot sandwiches, burritos, soups, and more. Menus online at breezeinn.com. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And here with me is my first guest, playwright Aaron Elmore. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Shelley.
You're welcome. Now, Aaron, since you're in the indoor entertainment industry, how much do you love rainy days?
We're certainly hoping for a few of those here, I'm sorry to say, Juno, coming up this summer so that you can take a time out of your busy day to come watch a new comedy that I've written called Running with Pretty Sharp Things. Started about a year and a half ago with a rough draft. I had gathered the ruffians together and had a read, and, well, matters of completely fallen apart from there. So we have many, many versions later, and the story's been arisen and fallen, and here we are. We had a preview last night. 17 people came. It was very
really?
Nice. Tomorrow night we have another preview, Thursday night at 7:30, and then Friday we open. We'll be running until the weekend after July 4th, so lots of chances to see it.
Fantastic. And so this is a new comedy, and you are the writer.
A brand new comedy, yes.
It is about love, war, and tailoring. I'm already intrigued.
I have a long history with tailoring, certainly, and I've been making clothes. I've been apprenticed to a tailor myself here, almost 30 years ago now, I guess. And I've learned some of the ins and outs of that amazing discipline, how tailoring is all about style and fit, details. Essentially, it's the fanciest possible way of putting holes in fabric that won't come apart. It's all about pockets. That has stayed with me all these years. The reason why I came to Alaska originally was as an actor, but I immediately got to work in the basement costume shop at Perseverance Theater for about 5 years. So that still deeply scarred from that basement experience, smelly basement. So that's why the play itself, Running with Pretty Sharp Things about tailors, is set in a smelly basement. In a fictitious city, I wanted to write a play about a place that was familiar, but not too far away from our world. So it's the fictitious city of Gray Waters where this takes place, and that's a coastal city with a wall around it. They fish a lot of herring, and they have some dreadful stinky water that boils out of the ground that they have to drink.
Oh, my goodness.
A wonderful group of people gathered together to help put this thing together, and so I can give you an idea about what these characters are all about. The main thrust of the whole story centers around a character named John Threadneedle and his boss, Ted Pins, who run a tiny tailor shop called Pins and Company. They're on Taylor Street in Graywater. Hadassah Nelson's taken on John Threadneedle, and Dan Wayne is playing Ted Pins. And I've had them in mind to play these parts since I started writing the play. So it's been a wonderful thrill to me to have them be with this process right the way through from the very beginning. That was we were speaking before about whether or not there was any Shakespearean influence in this play. Having done 17 of his plays, some of them multiple times, read all of them, it certainly that's here. But one of the things that he did was he got to write for the actors that he knew, which is a great thing. I've managed to experience that, and I'm very, very happy. Into the midst of the lives of Ted and John comes a mysterious stranger, who's played by Natalia Spangler, who literally drops into the middle of their lives and breaks everything to pieces. Zebediah Bodine plays a character we come to know initially as Fred the Fisher. Turns out he's in disguise. He's actually the king. And there's another Shakespearean influence. I couldn't put a chief executive in the city without him being a king. It's just something I'm stuck on. He has ministers, of course, ministers behind the throne, which boss him around and make him do things that he doesn't want to do. And one of the things they want to do is start a war, which is an enormously popular thing to do with a young monarch. or a young new executive. Very, very popular thing. Been done over and over again for as long as history has been written, and probably much longer than that. The ministers are in charge of various parts of the city. The Minister of Fish is played by Mike Matthews. The Minister of Steam by my wife and co-founder and co-artistic director, Katie Jensen. The Minister of Stone by Ellie Peisel Davis. And the Minister of Steel by Becky Orford. And I am in the production as well. It wasn't my original plan, but that's where I've ended up as the Minister of Culture, Preston Steamiron.
Ooh, great name.
Yeah,
it's a great name you wrote for yourself
He does not like these two tailors very much. So that, a lot of the conflict of the thing comes about between them. Working out their difficulties. Rounding out this world, we have Arlo Peisel Davis playing a assistant dairy delivery associate named Jack, who works for a dairyman named Dampager, who's delivering milk, which is, of course, the thing that makes coffee worth drinking to a lot of people.
To me.
The tailor shop has a number of customers. There's a canal bargeman, a lawyer getting his tie tied, a tube inspector. We are within the culture of Greywater right now, speaking in the tubes. They've created a marvelous kind of technology around being able to communicate over vast distances by shouting down pieces of plumbing. So that's one of the things.
A series of interconnected tubes?
Absolutely. Yes.
How about that?
It seemed like an innovation. So I thought I'd include that in the world. Their landlady, Madam Vicky, carries a torch for Ted Pins, and so there's some love interest there. Katie plays that part as well. And John's girl, Gladly Tucker, is unfortunately heiress to a competing firm called Plucker and Teats, and they have trouble with each other over that. And the tubes, of course, are managed by Mellifluous Voxman. Mel Voxman is the voice of the town crier and all the tubes. So we have rounded out with a couple of hired guns by the town. That's our bunch. And the story is really about what John tries to accomplish when he makes his masterwork.
And why, why is it called Running with Pretty Sharp Things? Get the tailor connection.
Sure,
but
yeah. A lot of these, this world is twisted ever so slightly on its side, so it's a sort of to one side of us. And running with scissors is something that a lot of lawyers have told me they try to keep their clients from doing. It's what we try to keep our children from doing. It's something that people do, in any case. But running with scissors didn't seem quite on, but there are a number of other pointy objects in this, and needles and pins, and so I thought, well, let's just make it any number of pretty sharp things that these people might be endangering each other with.
I really like that title a lot.
Good.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with playwright Aaron Elmore about his new comedy about love, war, and tailoring called Running with Pretty Sharp Things. It opens this Friday, yes? Runs until 4th
Runs
of July?
Actually the weekend after, so the 9th of July.
Okay. And for those who don't know, could you tell us, where is Theater in the Rough?
Absolutely. Theater in the Rough holds its plays in McPheeters Hall at 4th and Gold there, the parish hall for Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. We've been doing that there for many years now, almost, yeah.
And you said you were one of the co-founders?
Yes. Katie and I started this 25 years ago. So this is really the exclamation point to our 25th anniversary season.
Excellent.
We started out reading all of Shakespeare's plays when the Folio was here last fall. And then we did a production of 84 Charing Cross Road.
That one got a lot of great reviews.
Yes, that was wonderful fun. And now here we are, some months later, at the ragged end of our season with a brand new comedy.
Speaking of ragged, I was just wondering, what's the story behind the name Theater in the Rough? Why not Theater in the Smooth?
Well, yeah, indeed. I suppose it was a play on diamonds in the rough. We had initially, when we started doing our productions, discovered our passion for all the characters that we ended up portraying. We found that the villains often had something redeeming about them. We found that most of the heroes that we really liked had something about them that wasn't quite on. And all of us are still forming ourselves in a lot of ways and being formed by the world. So we like the idea that what we were also doing as theater practitioners was also forming our plays and forming ourselves as artists. So we start out rough. We always continue to knock the corners off, but we still find more rough places. So
I like the name very much. I think it's very catchy.
Yeah.
So where can we get tickets? Where can we find more information?
All the usual outlets and the Vendini outlets. Jack's got them.
So
you get
online,
them on them. Yes,
and Jack,
online.
Hearthside
the bookstores,
books.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you can also get them at the door, of course.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being here
of course.
Telling us all about it. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it's a great deal of fun. I've had a wonderful treat being able to write this, and I'm very pleased to see it finally come up in front of us.
Running with Pretty Sharp Things starts this Friday. We'll hope for wet weather.
Yes.
The Association for the Education of Young Children of Southeast Alaska is proud to be a part of JPD's Year of Kindness by celebrating Fathers June 12th through 16th. All week long, the AEYC-SEA Facebook page will showcase fathers and the positive impact of male role models on young children's lives. Then, on Friday, June 16th, join AEYC to celebrate fathers and show how we care and value their hard work at Juneau's Froyo Valley location from 5 to 7 p.m. Fathers who attend with their children will receive $5 off. Learn more at 789-1235. This message brought to you by AEYC.
It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and my next guest is Pat Bielik, here to talk to us all about tango dancing. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
What do you love about dancing, tango or otherwise?
Oh, I've been teaching ballroom dancing since the 70s, and I love the connection. I love the physical. I love the musicality. I love all the people you meet, and tango just adds a whole different element. Because of the connection and because it is not a set pattern dance like many of the other dances have set basics. And tango is pretty unique in that way.
Yeah. What else appeals to you about tango dancing?
The music. The music
I like the music
too. Oh, my gosh. If you are a Pandora person, go and and type in Argentine tango music, and it will just broaden your horizon of the type of music.
Yeah, it's great. Very romantic.
Yes.
So you're here to talk to us about some lessons. I wanted to ask, first of all, where are some places that folks can go to tango dance in Juneau?
Well, it is a small community, and so right now it's Thursday evenings. We get together, our little community gets together every Thursday from 7 to 9. We have a fall workshop that usually goes over a full weekend, if not two. And then others, we just get together, and at times we can even sneak in a tango at those monthly ballroom dances and have an opportunity to dance it as well.
A little bit of showing off.
Yeah.
So you're here to talk about lessons. Can you tell us what's special about this summer and the lessons that you're offering?
Well, we have been meeting for several years on a regular basis, on a weekly basis. And right now we are meeting at the Channel Dance Studio, and we dance from 7 to 9. During the months of June and July, we are offering actually free lessons from 7 to 8 o'clock to give people an opportunity to come and see, you know, I've heard about tango, or I've maybe wanted to try it, or I've watched it and it's just like, wow, here's an opportunity to come and experience it. And it is free for those 2 months to give you that opportunity.
Wow, free, not much is free around here.
And that's true.
Very few lessons. So that's really exciting. What a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So we're pretty
lessons.
Excited. We want to grow our community. On a regular basis, we get, let's just say, around 20. Last week we had 24 people at show. And what is lovely about that is you don't need a partner.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. What you do is you dance a couple dances with one partner, and then there's a little interlude that is played called a cortina, and you can then change partners and then go dance with them for a couple songs and then change again and change. And by changing partners, it's like a whole new dance, because tango is the dance of connection, and it's not a preset basic step, like swing has a basic step and waltz and foxtrot, but tango doesn't. Tango is about connecting to your partner and the music and your balance, and the leader just guides the follower in different places, and how she knows where to go is you are connected heart to heart. So wherever his heart is, your heart is facing it. So that dictates when he turns one way, that dictates where you go, maybe how big of a step. And it's a beautiful, almost of an improv kind of style of dancing, couple dancing.
Yes, it sounds beautiful, but it also sounds difficult. Is it very hard to learn?
Well, I want you to think of learning Argentine tango like learning a language, a brand new language. And before you can put individual words together into this beautiful sentence or conversation, you have to learn a little bit about the vocabulary. And these lessons are providing you that vocabulary so that you can then put them together, and the leader, he invites the lady to follow or to move, and then she interprets that movement because there's not a set pattern. And then whatever she does, then he follows her. And so there's this beautiful conversation. And the more vocabulary you have, the more in-depth and more colorful that conversation can be.
That is a wonderful description. And, okay, so I wanted to ask about, like, if you're first time or if you're coming in, what should you expect? What's the format of the night or the lesson?
Okay, so we start right at 7 o'clock. Again, you do not need a partner. And you will come up. We do ask that you bring a clean pair of shoes, because on a studio dance floor, you do not want to track in dirt, especially with the dancing that we do. So bring an indoor pair of shoes, preferably kind of a slick leather, because you do pivot a lot. And then right at 7, we start doing individual movements, and then we do those little movements with a partner, and then we add the embrace, and then we add the music. And then we start doing little steps, little foundation steps. So as a first time doing anything, and you come in and there's other people who may already know more, it's a little intimidating. You know, it's that little, sweating or shaking factor of someone in an embrace that you may not know or that you feel they know more than you do. But we're really supportive of each other. It's the most incredible community that I have been around, as far as we're from various backgrounds. And you just have that moment, those 3-minute songs, to just concentrate on that person that you're dancing with and just connecting.
Is there anything particular about tango? Well, I know there's particular steps that you follow in the dance. And then do those steps or movements correspond with the songs, the movement, the format of a tango song?
Well, that's interesting, because it is that interpretation of the music. So where you could take a sidestep on a beat and you could step on every beat, and then all of a sudden the leader invites you to just hold that beat. And then you get to do a little kind of something extra with a foot that's not doing anything. And then they will invite you to step someplace else. And so they're really, while there are foundation steps, we have walks and rock steps and molinetes and giros and all of these different steps, but they all depend upon that connection. And once you learn the basics of how to walk, how to rock, and how for the followers to move a grapevine around the leader,
it all comes together.
It sure does.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Well, thank you very much for talking me through that. Oh, one last thing. You told me there's a special word for a night out tango dancing.
Oh, yes, which is called a milonga. A milonga is an evening of tango dance. And when you go out, there are 3 dances that are done at a milonga. A tango, your basic Argentine tango, a waltz, V-A-L-S, which is a very fast waltz, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then another dance called the milonga, which is more of a march kind of feeling. So you have 3 dances that intertwine throughout the evening.
I have a tango song on deck here. Maybe I can play a couple notes and
sure.
Maybe you'd walk through a couple of what the steps might be.
Okay.
I hope this is a good one. Okay. How does that sound? Put your headphones on, yeah.
Me miras, de cerca me miras, cada vez más de cerca.
No good?
Nothing coming through.
Oh, I'm so sorry. All right. Well, we'll just let this be the outro, but thank you very much for coming here today and telling us about it. You mentioned there is more information to be found at the Tango Juno Facebook page.
Yes, please check that out. Rebecca Albert keeps that up to date, and add your name to her distribution list. She sends it out every week. But again, this is at the Channel Dance Studio, and their address is 2686 Channel Vista Drive. That's above that retaining wall near the hospital. So, and we start right at 7 o'clock. And if you have any questions, you can call me at 523-1995, 523-1995, or actually the Channel Dance Studio at 586-1213.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Accesos a lo no cotidiano, simplemente para embellecer lo cotidiano, al iluminarlo bruscamente de otra manera, sacarlo de sus casillas, definirlo de nuevo y mejor. Va
basta cerrar los ojos para deshacerlo todo y recomenzar. Exactamente con tu boca que sonríe por debajo de la que mi mano te dibuja.
Friends of the Juneau Public Library and the Gold Town Theater announced the final installment of Science on Screen this Friday at 7 p.m., beginning with Dr. Thomas Edwards, Deputy Director of NASA's Ames Research Center, presenting Looking with New Eyes, NASA Innovations in Technology and Exploration in Alaska and Beyond, at 360 at the KTOO building, followed by a showing of Agora at the Gold Town Theater starting at 9 p.m., a film that tells the story of a woman teaching astronomy, mathematics, and philosophy in ancient Egypt, this Friday, 7 p.m. at 360, with the film starting at 9 at the Gold Town Theater.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 14th of June, 2017. It is Flag Day. It was on this day, 1777. The government officially adopted the Stars and Stripes as our national flag, a flag that in 1909 Robert Peary placed at the North Pole, and in 1969 Neil Armstrong placed on the surface of the moon. It was on this day, 1822, the mathematician and mechanical engineer Charles Babbage presented a paper to the Royal Astronomical Society proposing a hand-cranked machine using the decimal number system to make computations, which then led to his analytical engine, which contained the basic principles of the modern electronic computer. The design was sound, but metalworking techniques back then were not precise enough, and so this early calculator was never built. It was on this day, 1775, the Continental Army was formed by the Second Continental Congress. It was 2 months after the battles of Lexington and Concord, which were fought by local volunteers. The Congress voted unanimously to make George Washington commander-in-chief, and he accepted, and that was the beginning of the United States Army. Though most of the Continental Army was disbanded in 1783 after the Treaty of Paris ended the Revolution, although two regiments stayed on, and the U.S. Army was formally organized in 1796. It's the birthday of the photojournalist Margaret Bourke White, born in the Bronx in New York, 1904. Her father was an amateur photographer, and as a kid she went with him on excursions and helped him in the dark room. And when she was in college, she started taking pictures herself. She opened her own photography studio in Cleveland, shooting industrial and architectural photographs. She once climbed out onto the gargoyles on the very top of the Chrysler Building to take pictures. Became a staff photographer for Fortune magazine, became the first Western photographer allowed into the Soviet Union, and went to work for Life magazine, developing the photo essay, photo essays on Germany, the Dust Bowl, and World War II. It's the birthday of the travel writer Jonathan Rabin, born in Norfolk, England, 1942, who in 1979 bought a tiny boat and set off down the Mississippi River and wrote about it in his book Old Glory, An American Voyage. And it's the birthday of the man who made it easy to find quotations, John Bartlett, born Plymouth, Massachusetts, 1820, compiled his quotations in his book Familiar Quotations, came out in 1855, Bartlett's Quotations. Here's a poem for today by Thomas Hardy, A Thunderstorm in Town. She wore a new terracotta dress, and we stayed because of the pelting storm within the hansom's dry recess, though the horse had stopped, yea, motionless, we sat on, snug and warm. Then the downpour ceased to my sharp, sad pain, and the glass that had screened our forms before flew up, and out she sprang to her door. I should have kissed her if the rain had lasted a minute more. A Thunderstorm in Town by Thomas Hardy. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Home Advisor, matching homeowners with background-checked professionals for home projects from minor repairs to major remodels. See homeowner reviews, compare prices, and book appointments at homeadvisor.com. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It is about 23 minutes to the top of the hour. And with me is my next guest calling in to tell us about a bit about the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon, Gershon Cohen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Did you run, bike, or swim to get to the phone today?
No, I just walked up a couple of flights of stairs, I'm afraid.
Okay. Well, I am really excited to talk about the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon because it's the first one, right? That's a big deal.
It is the first annual. We're certainly expecting it to continue on into the future.
Can you tell us how it came about?
Well, the idea came to a number of us to create an event that celebrated the Chilkat River and everything that it provides to the community of Haines. The river, if it wasn't for the river, I don't think any of us would be here, frankly. It provides us with food, and it provides us with jobs, it provides us with recreation. And it's really at the heart of the culture of the community. And so we just thought, you know, this is something we shouldn't be taking for granted. Most places in the country and in the world don't have something like this. This a pristine, productive river right there in their yard. And so we decided to have an event.
That's wonderful. Let's hear a little bit more about the details of the event. So first of all, where exactly does this take place if people don't know where the Chilkat River is?
Well, when you come to Haines, about 30 miles north of Haines is Mosquito Lake. And starting at the Mosquito Lake campground, folks, we're going to have a Le Mans start where people run down to get into their boats, either a kayak or a canoe, and they will paddle about a mile across Mosquito Lake and through a narrow slough and on into the Chilkat River. And they'll go down the Chilkat River towards town, getting out of the river at about 21 mile. And so they're going to go right past the village of Clockwan and then through the Bald Eagle Preserve. And then they'll get out of their boats, onto bikes, ride about 20 miles to town, just short of town. We've picked a spot there for folks to get off their bikes and then run about 7 miles down to Letnikoff Cove. So the race will be along the Chilkat River basically the whole way, and it'll be a paddle bike run.
That's so exciting. I'm beside myself. It sounds like so much fun. I'm not all trained up for it this time, but hopefully for the second annual, I might be a participant.
I think there'll be some serious competitors in it, but I also think there's going to be a lot of people doing it just for fun.
I mean, it sounds like so much fun. I like to do all of those things. But this triathlon is a little bit different because there's no swimming aspect, right? There's a kayaking element instead.
That's correct. Yeah, either kayak or canoe or a pack raft. We're allowing a pack raft as well. But, you know, when we first started thinking about this, we did a little research on it, and it turns out some of the earliest triathlons, and this goes back 100 years, were actually paddles and not swims. So we're not so much we're kind of returning to the tradition, less than breaking tradition, I think. But you know, the race is going to be going through some of the most beautiful country. I think, you know, that folks in Juneau are well aware of what the preserve looks like. You know, we've got snow-capped mountains coming straight, you know, 6,000 feet straight out of the river, and it'll just be a stunning race. And you might just paddle past a brown bear. Or a moose, and certainly folks will be seeing eagles all along the way going through the preserve. So it's, I think, a little bit unique in the sense that most triathlons, you probably don't run into as much wildlife as you might see on this one.
No doubt about that. And what sort of support do the organizers of the triathlon offer, or protection?
Well, we will be having people in critical places all along the river for the 8-mile trip on the river, so that people can't make any wrong turns, and we'll have people out there in boats, or, you know, if, you know, somebody has an issue, there will be safety people all along the route to make sure that nobody has a real problem. And then when they pull out of 21 mile, it's a large parking lot there that's used often by visitors to the preserve and by the local guiding companies. And so it's a good spot for folks to jump out of their boats and get on their bicycles. I should mention that it's open to solo competitors and also to teams. We have some teams of two and then mostly teams of three. So people can do just one leg. You don't have to do the whole race yourself. And then once the bike ride ends down near Jones Point, which is just before you get to town, then folks will get off their bikes and start running. And the run will be just beautiful all along Mud Bay Road, all the way down to Letnikoff Cove. And there's a big pavilion that was built there a couple years ago that were being donated the space by Haynes Packing Company. And that's where we'll have the awards. So that's where the race will end. And then that's where we'll have the awards ceremony and a party. We're going to have beer and food and music and give out a lot of great gifts and some cash prizes.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it would be without a party.
Well, I think people are going to be ready for it at the end.
I would say so, too. I really like the aspect of doing it as part of a team, where a team of three, each individual could do one leg. And that sounds pretty manageable.
Yeah, I think it makes it much more doable for a lot of. I mean, you know, we have some serious athletes here, and there's some folks that are coming from Whitehorse that are pretty serious about this kind of thing. But I think most people are going to be in it just because it's going to be a great day and a lot of fun.
Does the race cross into Canada at all? Do folks need to bring their passports?
No, it does not. It's starting at about 30 mile up the highway, so it's about 12 miles shy of the Canadian border. So no passports are necessary.
And how many miles is each leg?
8, 20, and 7.
So eight miles
on the river, 8 miles on the river, 20-mile bike ride, 7-mile run.
Now, you told me before the interview that you yourself are not a triathlete, but what is your connection to this event?
Well, first of all, I do love to get on the water, and I do kayak and canoe, and I do ride a bike. I don't do a lot of running, I have to admit that. But my connection to it actually is that I'm the project director of the Alaska Clean Water Advocacy Project, and we are a statewide organization that is working to protect water bodies around the state. And so, you know, celebrating the health of a healthy river is, frankly, is just, you know, very consistent with our mission and our message. So, you know, if folks are always saying, well, gee, you know, you're always opposing this or opposing that. Why don't you do something, you know, that's positive? And I thought, you know, they're right. I mean, we should be doing more that's just strictly for a positive reason. And so that's kind of where this really came out of. And, you know, since we've, you know, made the appeal to the public that we were going to be doing this, we have just a tremendous number of sponsors, some from Juno, a number from Haines, and then some national sponsors as well. Southeast Nugget Outfitters are sponsors, and HughesNet is a sponsor. They're going to fix this up with radio phones. Alaska Seaplanes is a sponsor. Mendenhall Auto Center is a sponsor. And then we have a number of sponsors from the Haines community, and then Patagonia, Cliff Bar, REI, all are donating gear for gifts, and we've had cash donations, so we're going to give away the cash as prizes as well.
Wow, that is an impressive list of sponsors.
Yeah, no, it's kind of blown us away, really. I think we just got two more today. And so, you know, Juno Racquet Club is a sponsor. They're giving us a bunch of day passes to give away. So, you know, it's being well supported by both Juno and Haines and on the national level as well. I think people are realizing, certainly the national organizations are realizing, that this is going to be an annual event, and it's going to get bigger. I mean, we already have 40 people signed up, 40 single or teams, and my expectation is that before the next month is over, because the race is in just about a month, I expect we'll be at about 60 to 70 participants, which really for a first-year event I think is pretty good.
You might get even more than that with this the Juno afternoon bump.
Well, you know, that's what we're hoping for, right? I mean, it would be great.
Yeah. If you're just joining me, you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. I'm speaking with Gershon Cohen about the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon. Gershon, I know this event has a fantastic website. I already went on it. Great details and about the maps and everything about the race. Is that the best place to go for information and registration and all that?
It is. Yeah, if people go to ChilkatChallengeTriathlon.com, they can find out everything they need to know about the race, and then there's also email addresses there and phone numbers if they really need to speak to somebody. We're happy to talk to folks. And there you can sign up online. You can make your payment. It's $50 to enter the race. And then there's a liability waiver that we're going to have people sign. It's, you know, and that kind of a thing. But the website's really the best way to find out about it. I should just mention, just so people know, the race itself is on the 15th, July 15th, Saturday. But there is a pre-race meeting the evening before. It'll be real late afternoon, early evening, the day before. And really, that's just for safety purposes. I mean, we just want to make, you know, we will have the latest information on the river. You know, where it's, you know, if it's high, if it's running fast, and we're going to be communicating that to people. We're also going to be checking out people's boats to make sure the boats are safe and that they have legitimate flotation devices, you know, PFDs. So that's where they'll get their bibs for the next day. So folks should be prepared to be in Haines the night before. We don't want anybody showing up at 6:30 in the morning and saying, gee, I want to get in the race that starts at 8 o'clock on Saturday. That won't happen. You really need to be here the day before to get all signed up and make sure that we all know what's going on. Because, you know, the river changes all the time. You know, you can have trees come down the river that'll change where the channel is, where you can go. And depending on how warm it is over the next month, the water levels will change, and that's going to change the speed of the river. So it's really important that people come the day before so that they're well prepared.
That's great advice, because this is Alaska after all. It's the wilderness. And as you said, conditions can change very quickly. I'm glad you mentioned that to everybody. Well, the town of Haines must be very excited for yet another large-scale sporting event to take place in their town.
Haines is turning out to be the event capital, I think, in Southeast, which, you know, the local businesses like. I mean, let's face it, we're going to have a lot of people come to town that are going to be staying in hotels and eating in restaurants and shopping while they're here. And, you know, it's I guess that's another aspect of this, really, that it's important for people to realize that, one of the things that the river provides, outside of just the obvious of, commercial fishing jobs and tourism jobs, it also creates it's also a generator for income for a lot of people, just for, a more low scale, you might say, tourism that can go on here. And so an event that's going to bring people to town for the weekend is going to be, it's always another little kick for the economy. And, there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that at all. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about the event?
No, that'll do it. No, July 15th in Haines, and ChilkatChallengeTriathlon.com to sign up and find out more information. Appreciate it, Shelley. Thanks a lot for having me.
Of course. Have a great day.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Registration deadline for that is July 1st, so don't miss out.
Which way the wind blows, when this day is done.
This is Bird Note. This bird has a problem. The red-backed fairy wren is a tiny, perky songbird that lives in the scrublands of northern and northeastern Australia. It's highly territorial. Both males and females vigorously defend their territory from intruders. The problem is that red-backed fairy wrens are highly promiscuous, so it's difficult for a male to be sure that the eggs in his nest are his own. One way to avoid this predicament is for the male to physically challenge any rivals who approach his territory by roughing them up. Another way to deal with it is to sing. Red-backed fairy wren pairs will sing a duet in order to deter rival males from intruding on their territory. Research published in 2016 found that the pairs that sang together had many more of their own genetic offspring in their nests than pairs where the resident male had spent most of his time beating up the intruder. So for the male, aggression might not accomplish the goal of ensuring paternity, but singing a spirited duet with a partner could. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
In 1916, no one knew the booming town of Treadwell, home to the largest gold mine in the world, was on the brink of its ultimate destruction. In one momentous year, infrastructure crumbles, fires rage, and war looms. Young engineer George Barnett arrives in the territory of Alaska with guts and genius, not expecting to fall in love or carry the safety of the miners and the town on his shoulders. See the earth-shattering new play, Treadwell Gold, at Perseverance Theater, June 22nd through July 3rd. Tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, ptalaska.org, and 463-TIXS.
Thank you for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. Our guests were Aaron Elmore from Theater in the Rough, Pat Bielik from Tango Juno, and Gershon Cohen talking about the Chilkat Challenge Triathlon. We featured music by Pink Floyd, The Gotan Project, Xavier Redd, and right now, Ernest Ranglin. On tomorrow's show, we'll hear about the UAS Outdoor Studies Program with our guest Kevin Krein. We'll also talk with Sydney Mitchell from Shoefly, who recently returned from a shoe manufacturer in Spain, where she gave her input on their new line. William Todd Hunt will be here with a preview of this weekend's saxophone showcase, and Nancy DeCherney will return with Arts Up. That's tomorrow at 3 on KTOO. Jeff Brown is the producer of Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org, and it will repeat in about 1 minute on KRNN 102.7. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.